Well, some may come to a different conclusion using the same evidence and may begin celebrating Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, on a Saturday evening. I'm going to celebrate it commencing tomorrow at sunset. So at sunset tomorrow, I am observing the moon phases, will be Yom Kippurim. So whether you are going to celebrate it as the same day that I am, beginning at sundown on this Friday, tomorrow, through sundown the following day on the Shabbat, Saturday, or the following day, as some will do, based upon their view of what was the first day of this, the seventh month in Yahweh's calendar. We are approaching Yom Kippurim. And what I would like to do is to take today and tomorrow, and rather than continuing to discredit, to expose and condemn Paul and his opening thesis to humankind, which is important because more Americans are Christian than any other religion. Perhaps that's changed recently, and that with the indoctrination of political correctness, more Americans, particularly young Americans, are probably socialist, secular, humanist than anything else. But second to that would be Christians, and therefore exposing the author of Christianity is important because there is no way to embrace Yahweh, to come to know him, to engage in the covenant, to walk along this path that he has prepared from our world to his without first rejecting one's religion. So doing that is an extraordinarily important part of this program. But we're going to take a break from it today and tomorrow to talk about Yom Kippur. Immediately after concluding his thoughts on Teruah, which is what we celebrated just 10 days ago. Well, it'll be 10 days tomorrow evening. Then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying, on the 10th of the seventh month is the day of reconciliations, Kippurim, Yom Kippurim. So who is this fellow that's making this declaration? I mean, should we take this seriously? Is it a sheep herder in Arabia? Is it an ignoramus someplace that has his own special agenda? Is it a dictator someplace? Is it a warlord? Is it a man who would have you believe that he is royal and king? Is a man who is trying to take that which belongs to others through conniving them or through some religious scheme? Is it someone that we can disregard? Who is Yahweh? Well, he's the author of the Torah. He claims to be the creator of the universe. He asserts that he authored life. He presents himself as God. So that's who Yahweh is, if you believe him. But should you believe him? So that's the question. Because Yahweh has just declared that the 10th day of the 7th month, which will begin at sundown tomorrow as we commence the Shabbat, is the day of reconciliations. If he's God, that ought to matter. So is Yahweh God? Now, if you're a Christian, you think that the Torah was inspired by God, so you would naturally be prone to say, yeah, he's God, but you've been told by this Paul fellow that everything that he wrote in his Torah doesn't apply to you. Now, I don't know how that's possible. It's certainly not rational. It's not reasonable. But what the heck? Religion is never rational. It's never reasonable. But Yahweh states that he's God. He says that his one and only name is Yahweh. He includes his name 7,000 times. Not 6,999. Not 7,001. Exactly 7,000 times in his written testimony, his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He says that's his one and only name. So should we consider this individual God? He claims to be God. He claims to be the creator of the universe. He claims to be the author of life. He claims to have inspired every word of his Torah, every word of his prophets, every word of his Psalms. So, is this Yahweh individual made up, fabricated, or is it some nebulous individual out there that's not fabricated but making false claims? I mean, you really have three choices with Yahweh. That Yahweh was a figment of Moshe's imagination. That his story about Abraham, even though all the details check out, is not true. That his story about Noah, even though all the details check out, is not true. That his story about Adam, even though all the details check out, is just not true. And that his involvement with the children of Israel in Egypt, even though all of the details check out, I mean, all of the details can be confirmed, is just not true. That he's just a figment of their imagination, even though every aspect of the story is precisely accurate. He's imagined, but imagined in a context where every detail has been shown to be true. Yeah, it's a stretch. Or Yahweh is someone who was really smart way before his time, and that fooled people into thinking that he was God, but he really exists. He's just really not God. That's option number two. Convinced a lot of people he was God. Performed a lot of miracles on behalf. Really articulate. Managed to inspire people over a 1,000-year period of time. Really, 1,000 years. But this individual, even though he inspired people with a consistent story over a 1,000-year period of time, it individual really wasn't God, just pretending to be God. Or he was God. And if he was God, he's the only God. Yeah, those are your three choices. I mean, if you're listening to this program and you've got a third option, I'd be glad to hear it. But either complete myth, figment of Moshe's imagination, a real individual, and who was able to inspire a consistent story through a variety of people over 1,000 years, but not really God, or he's God. Now, if he's God, you ought to pay attention to what he has to say. You ought not change what he has to say. You ought not ignore what he has to say. You ought not in any way disregard what he has to say. If he's a myth, you ought to disregard all of this. If it's a myth, then you ought not have an Old Testament clinging to your New Testament if you're a Christian. If he's a myth and the whole thing is just mythology, get rid of it. I mean, it's counterproductive. It's a lie. And if he was some inspired individual who managed to convey information to people consistently over 1,000 years, yeah, you may want to hear what he has to say. But if he's calling himself God, the creator of the universe and the author of life, you may not want to trust anything he has to say. or anyone that ever spoke for him. So, friends, did Yahweh prove that he is the creator of the universe, the author of life, the inspiration of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms? Did he do so? And if he did so, then what are you going to do about it? Now, I wrote a book called Yada Yah. You find it at yadayah.com. I encourage you to go there. The purpose of it was to introduce you to Yahweh. Yada means to know. And Yah is the short and familiar version of Yahweh's name, yadayah.com. The purpose of the book was to introduce you to him in his words, to expose you to what he had to say about himself. But more important, the principal purpose of Yada Yah wasn't just to introduce you to what Yahweh, who Yahweh is, based upon his own testimony, and what he had to say, what he had to offer, what he had to convey. The purpose of it was to allow Yahweh's testimony to prove, beyond any doubt, that he exists and that he's God. I am unaware of anyone over the past 10 years who has read Yada Yah and who has been convinced otherwise. I don't think it's possible. I do not think that anyone can read Yada Yah, particularly with an open mind, and listen to God's testimony about himself and come to any other conclusion than he is God. Now, there's a number of reasons I say that. The first of those is that we begin with a creation account where Yahweh tells us when and how and in what order, over what period of time, he engaged to create the universe and life as we know it. Back at the time that he said that, there was, other than, okay, I'm claiming to be creator and this is how I did things, they would have had no way to understand relativity, no way to understand energy and matter and the connectivity of these things. They would never have understood the Cambrian explosion or life or the basis of life, which is a language, DNA. We know those things now. We even know of a thing called the Big Bang, all of which Yahweh conveyed to us. We promised to talk about Yom Kippurim, and Yahweh makes a statement that the 10th day of the 7th month is Yom Kippurim, and I'm spending all my time on who is Yahweh. Because really, it all comes down to that. Yom Kippurim, Day of Reconciliations, doesn't mean anything unless you know with whom you are reconciling, why you're reconciling. What does it mean to reconcile? What is the result of reconciliation? And that all depends on with whom you're doing it with. Whether or not you attend, observe Yom Kippurim really should depend on whether or not you view Yahweh as God. Now, if you believe that the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, if you have studied them sufficiently, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and know that they were inspired, then you got one, there's only one logical conclusion, that Yahweh is God. Full stop. Only God. No other God. He is God, period. Now, if you haven't, then I'm going to give you some evidence that you ought to consider. And for the backup for this, all of the justification for this, go read yadayah.com. It's free. You're not going to be asked for any personal information. You're not going to be asked for a donation. You're not going to be asked for anything. It's just free. YadaYah.com. That's some 2,500 pages of Yahweh's testimony, all laid out for you. And in the first volume, Creation Volume, Haya Volume, We Exist Volume, what you're going to find is that Yahweh's creation account is precisely accurate, right down to the time that it took to get from the transition from energy and the Big Bang from energy into matter to where we are right now, some 12 years prior to the tribulation and less than 20 years away from 6,000 Yah, when he's going to return, camp out with us, celebrating Sukkah, which is the next Moed Mikra. Whole timelines presented right there. And it's every detail is accurate, including the fact that we now have absolute irrefutable evidence from the cosmic microwave radiation that is in the background emanating from the Big Bang, a term that Yahweh himself coins in his creation account, that 6 24-hour days from our perspective here on Earth is exactly how long creation took from the perspective of someone at creation. And that now using Earth time looking back is about 14 to 15 billion years. And they're exactly the same based upon relativity. The background radiation was stretched 10 to the 12th power. Take 14 to 15 billion years, multiply them by 365 and a quarter days, divide them by 10 to the 12th power, and the answer is 6. Now, that doesn't get your attention, as well as every aspect of his creation account is an absolute fit for reality as it's being observed today. And that the flood account, right down to its inception, with an upwelling of seawater from the Burkle impact crater, right at the moment that he said it was going to occur, right in the region that he said it was going to occur, and every aspect of that region shows absolute proof that it occurred right then, right there. To the fact that this is followed by a detailed analysis of the world as it existed up the Euphrates and Tigris rivers, down into Israel and into through Syria and then into Egypt, that every detail that God provided along his timeline historically has been shown to be accurate. Every minute historical detail, most accurate historical book ever written of ancient times and ancient places. And then you have to deal with the prophecy. The fact that there are thousands of very detailed prophecies committed to writing. Sometimes hundreds of years, sometimes thousands of years before those events take place. Leading all the way up to what we're witnessing today, where in Yeshayah, Yahweh tells us about the war that we're witnessing right now in Syria. What is happening as a result of that war? What is going to transpire as a result of that war? How the United States is involved as a belligerent in that war? And what happens to Israel as a result? All of it laid out for us. And if you view these thousands of precise prophecies like that one, with a rational mind, you will come to know that Yahweh is indeed God. Now that we have established who Yahweh is, then Yahweh declared the word, Dabar, to Moshe, saying, Amar, declaring, on the 10th of the 7th month, Kodesh, time of renewal, is the day of reconciliations, Kippurim, of pardons and forgiveness. Kafar, which is the basis of Kippur, means to purge by covering. As such, it's used to describe the cover of the Ark of the Covenant, which comprises the mercy seat. That's where the blood of the sacrificial lamb was sprinkled to reconcile our relationship, the covenant with Yahweh. Kafar, therefore, is symbolic of the garment of light that Yahweh's set-apart spirit adorns us in when we are reborn from above, adopted into Yahweh's family, enlightened, forgiven, appear perfect in his eyes. This garment of light that kafar covers us precludes God from seeing our imperfections so that we look absolutely perfect in his eyes. Now, you're going to want to keep this connection with the set-apart spirit and the garment of light in mind as we continue to consider the instructions regarding this mikra. Because, as I've said, Kippurim, which is the plural of Kippur, the YM ending just makes it plural in Hebrew. So Kippur is based upon the Hebrew concept of kafar, which means to cover. And it's specifically used in conjunction with the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. Keep that in mind, folks, because it's important to understand these terms. Yahweh says, this exists as a set apart and cleansing, a kodesh, invitation to be called out and meet Mikra for you. So we've established who Yahweh is. He has identified this day. He calls it Yom Kippurim, the day of being covered, the day of having your relationship reconciled, the day of being forgiven. He's defined it as that kind of a day. And he says this day is in the seventh month, which is important as well. And now he's telling us that it exists. It's Haya. It was, it is, it always will be. Kodesh. Everything important to Yahweh is Kodesh. Kodesh means set apart. It has a secondary connotation to clean, to purge. But its primary connotation is just set apart. The spirit of Yahweh, and this is also important and relative to what God's instructions say regarding this day. The spirit of Yahweh, spirit is Ruach, is modified consistently through the Torah, prophets, and Psalms by the adjective Kodesh. She is, spirit is a feminine noun, that's important, set apart, Kodesh. It's the set-apart spirit, speaking of the maternal aspects of Yahweh's nature. The set-apart spirit is the most commonly referred entity being set apart. Yosha is referred to as Kodesh Kodesh, or the most set apart, or twice set apart. And that is because he's not just set apart from Yahweh, part of Yahweh, set apart from him, as is the set apart spirit, part of Yahweh, set apart from him. That doesn't make two gods. It makes just part of God is set apart from him. But Yosha is set apart twice, Kodesh, Kodesh, which means not only Yahweh, who is spirit, setting part of his spirit aside, apart to serve us, enlighten us, adorn us, care for us, cover us, cleanse us, but the twice set apart, Kodesh, Kodesh, is then that part of Yahweh's spirit that is set apart from him is then transitioned from spiritual energy to matter and is a corporeal manifestation of Yahweh and therefore hugely, hugely diminished. So a diminished, a small portion of Yahweh further diminished is Yahusha. It is why the set-apart spirit is vastly more important than is Yosha. You know, Christians ought never have had a religion devoted to a misnomer. But beyond that, even if they knew who Yosha was, Yosha is not as important as the set-apart spirit. And the set-apart spirit is not as important as the source of the set-apart spirit, Yahweh. That's why understanding who Yahweh is so important. Well, this day, this invitation to be called out and meet is Kodesh. It is set apart from just ordinary days. Special. It is a Mikra. There are seven Mikra. Mikra is based upon the Hebrew word kara, the verb kara. To kara is to call out, to summon, to invite, to proclaim, to welcome, to meet, to encounter, to read, and to recite. What a marvelous verb. Tells us all those things. You're being invited. The Mikra is an invitation. Well, then, if it's an invitation, knowing who has sent the invitation is really important. In this case, the source of the invitation is Yahweh, the Creator God of the universe. So you have an invitation being offered to you. He said, this day is for you. To what? What does Kara tell us beyond that it's an invitation? It means to meet. It means to be called out and to meet. It means to read and recite. Read and recite what, do you suppose? The Torah, perhaps, where this invitation is inscribed for us? An invitation at a time certain, the 10th day of the 7th month, at sundown, is an invitation to be called out and meet from the Creator of the universe. Well, that would be important. And yet not one in a million people observe this day, answer that invitation. And it's not just a day to meet, but to be welcomed, to encounter God, to be called out of the world, to read and recite His testimony. It is a mikra, of which there are 7, the most important 7 days each year, a day that is kodesh, special, and set apart. I understand we have Glenn back with us. Glenn, did you have a comment on this?
Yes, I do. One that bring up a potential problem with Yom Kippur, at least for modern Jews.
Yes.
It's the Day of Coverings, and, you know, forgiveness of sin, reconciliations, and yet without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. So for those who accept Yahusha as the Passover lamb, and the final, you know, the final atonement, that's not a problem. But just as Yahweh, you know, slew animals, shed blood, and made to make coverings for Adam and Shawa in the garden, the shedding of blood would still be a necessity Jews. And without a temple, a tabernacle, or a priest, or a sacrifice, they've got a problem in terms of fulfilling the holiday.
What you say is mostly true. And it's important. And it's nothing that you've said that's untrue, but the shedding of blood represents life, according to Yahweh. And so the shedding of blood really only resolved our mortality. It's the following day, Matzah, that is the day that we are not just forgiven, but we're proclaimed innocent because the fungus of sin is completely removed from us. But without an understanding and an acceptance of what those days represent, you are correct. There can be no reconciliation. And all of the process that was demonstrated tangibly through the tabernacle and later the temple and the Ark of the Covenant and its mercy seat and the sprinkling of the blood of the Passover lamb, followed by the removal of the fungus of yeast from our souls, there can be no reconciliation. Now, all of that's true. That's a slightly expanded version of what you said. But all of that's true. But there's one other aspect of Judaism that is crippling. And that is that Jews celebrate this day as a day of affliction.
Ooh.
And so they afflict their souls on this day. This is a day that they deny themselves. They afflict themselves. And that's exactly the opposite of what you should do if you're trying to reconcile a relationship. If somebody is inviting you as a father to reconcile your relationship, the last thing they would want you to do is to afflict yourself. And
that's almost like Catholic monks flagellating themselves or
it is exactly
wearing a camel hair coat or something like that.
Or Shiite Muslims on Ashura Day whipping themselves.
Right.
Or the Roman Catholics during the plagues and them constantly punishing themselves by self-flagellation to win favor with God. Yes, this idea that God wants man to afflict himself, and afflict means to debase oneself, is just pathetic. And that's how it's celebrated
in the
religious community.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This always reminds me of the month scene where the monks are walking along, whacking themselves in the head with boards. You know,
yeah,
that's crazy.
That is the celebration of Yom Kippur. I mean, we're going to get into how they came to the afflict connotation and why it's moronic. But fortunately for Jews, and this is one other thing that I just like to correct ever so subtly from what you've said, is that the vast majority of Jews today are not religious. The vast majority, the overwhelming preponderance of Jews today are not adherents of rabbinical Judaism. Those that are lost. There's no hope for them. They're completely impervious to evidence and reason. You're not going to reach them. They're lost. But the vast majority of Jews today actually are open-minded. In fact, almost all of the initial individuals that embraced Yahweh's testimony as it was presented in Yad HaYom, overwhelmingly were secular Jews, agnostic Jews who came to know Yahweh through his testimony as it presented in Yad HaYom. And so fortunately, the condition that you describe, while accurate, does not influence the majority of Jews today. So here's Yahweh's instruction on this, regarding this invitation to meet with him. He says, and your soul, nefesh, shall respond and answer. Oh, one of the most important of all Hebrew words. It's anah, shall respond to the summons, making a declaration after engaging in thought, verbally communicating, appearing before and approaching, karab, coming and drawing near, being present with, isha, the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates, to approach Yahweh. Well, so context is really important here. That's why I told you it was important to understand what Kodesh means, what Kafar, the basis of Kippur, means in terms of covering, set apart in Kodesh. Really important to understand that the most referred to Kodesh individual is the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit, and how the set-apart spirit is feminine. Ruach is a feminine noun in Hebrew. You got to put all of these things together. And so Yahweh is not saying, he's not interested in anything other than your soul. That one part of you, your physical body is going to die, dust to dust. But your soul can endure. And this is the means for your soul to continue to endure. Nefesh is soul. Now, I know it's not rendered that way in most English Bibles, but nefesh means soul. It's the breath of life. It's the uniqueness of an individual. All animals, including humans, have souls. Nefesh is your soul. It is your consciousness. Consciousness is the innate ability of an animal, unlike a plant, unlike a mineral, to observe and respond to their environment. And that's what we're asked to do, to observe and then to respond. And your soul shall ana. Oh, it's giving an invitation, right? It's important to know what mikra means, that mikra is based upon kara, which is to invite. What do you do when you receive an invitation? Yahweh was telling us, and your soul should respond and answer. Reply to the invitation. Make a declaration after engaging in thought. Verbally communicating. That's what anah means. That's its primary meaning. Now, you're going to find here that religious Jews took its secondary meaning. It's not really its secondary meaning. It would be its all the way down to 11th or 12th meaning, which is to afflict. So appearing before and approaching karab, coming and drawing near, being present with. You'll find that English Bibles have that making an offering. But there's nothing associated with making an offering with karab. It means to draw near. And then you have the feminine word for fire. Yahweh presents himself as the fire on the top of Mount Horeb. He is also the pillar of fire leading his children by night to the promised land. Yahweh represents himself, manifests parts of his nature by fire, because fire is radiant energy, because it's light, provides light at night, and because his nature as a spirit is energy and light. And so he manifests himself as fire. He is now manifesting the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh, as the feminine manifestation of that light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates. La, which means either unto, toward, on behalf of, in relation to, are most important to approach Yahweh. You want to approach Yahweh? You need to appear, first of all, you need to answer these seven invitations to meet, which less than one in a million people does today. You need to answer these invitations to be called out and meet, just as he's saying here, and your soul shall respond and answer, Anah. You need to appear before, to approach the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates. Talking about the set-apart spirit to approach Yahweh. If you're not enveloped in the set-apart spirit, if you try to appear before God naked, all of your flaws are manifest. The only way to appear before God and look perfect is to be enveloped in his set-apart spirit. That's what this invitation is all about. It's a powerful call, an invitation to us. And your soul shall respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates to approach Yahweh, which just happens to be God. We'll be back with you tomorrow. May Yahweh bless.